General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushbelts of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
The Namib, which was given its name by the Hottentots, is the oldest desert in the world. A weird and waterless expanse that stretches from the Kaaka Belt in the north to the Orange River in the south. Yet the word desert gives the wrong impression, for there are grassy flats, hills and mountains. Mountains such as Spitzkopje, which floats like a mirage out of the flat plain and is said to conceal the Bushman's paradise. The Brandberg Range, home of the famous White Lady. The Bogenfels, a soaring rock arch fashioned by a restless sea. And those immense sand dunes that make a formidable barrier between the coast and the interior. The Namib is battered by cold Atlantic waves on one side, and on the other, it stretches its arid fingers to clutch at the mountainous plateau that runs through the middle of Southwest Africa. This desolate lunar landscape is the setting for my story tonight. A story that I have called To Catch an Oryx. To Catch an Oryx, or to call the animal by its better-known name, a gemsbok. Now, there are many different ways of catching animals. The pole and rope method is dangerous because the chances are that you'll break the creature's neck, and possibly your own as well. Traps are cruel and may either damage the animal permanently or leave him to the mercy of the hyena. Hunting dogs are too vicious, and nets are only practicable in a restricted area. The team that journeyed to the Tinkers Flats, part of the Namib Desert that has been acquired by the Nature Conservation Department of Southwest Africa, planned to experiment with an immobilization drug called M99. And they hoped to catch 5 gemsbok and transport them to the Daanvuljoen Game Park near Windhoek. After a long, dusty journey, they camped on the flats near a dry riverbed. And before they went to sleep, they discussed around the campfire their plans for the following day. Jaime Ebedees, chief vet at the Atosha Game Reserve, senior game ranger Rodney Baxter, chief game catcher in the southwest Bernard Viljoen, and Timothy Bungie from Springbok Radio.
This is the point. I don't mind who drives me, as long as the chap driving realizes two particular factors. That the distance is very close, and that the chap on the back is vulnerable, you know what I mean? In other words, you must drive as though you've got a tray of eggs on the back, and at the same time get you close enough, which takes a sort of a technique.
I know this part of the world here around the Tsimmasberg quite well. Mm-hmm. I know where most of the dongas are situated and that sort of thing.
All right, well, the big thing then is this. We got to get the catching vehicle to the area, but it doesn't come on the operation until an animal's down. So we can all get on the truck. You drive, I'll dart. Doc Everdees can sit in the front and guide you if he feels you're going off course. Once we've darted an animal, we can take him back and someone can bring up the loading vehicle, take the crate off, put him in. And leave the crate there with the animal in it to avoid it getting knocked around unnecessarily and give it a chance to quieten down.
Yes, that would be a good thing.
Then go on to the next one, and once we've got 5, we come back and simply load those 5 up and we're ready to go. Now the starting time, I think we should get up as early as possible, but I'm just wondering if If too early is a good thing. You remember at Aus, we were riding into the rising sun, couldn't see where we were going. And visibility is an important thing and a safety factor.
There's another very, very important aspect that we've proved beyond a doubt up in Tosha Game Park. And that is, it is much easier to catch these animals during the heat of the day when they're resting.
They're a bit listless, they're not so active. Then.
They're not so active. In the early morning we find they're very frisky and they're aware of their surroundings and they're most difficult to catch.
How do you think they'll stand the journey, Jaime?
They'll take it well. Remember we transported those Gimsbok down to Swakopmund last year.
Mm. Is the idea with M99 that the animal has no memory of its capture at all?
M99 has got that property that the animal doesn't remember being caught. It suffers, one can almost say, from amnesia. The beauty of M99, of course, is that you can reverse its action by the administration of an antidote. The one we're going to use tomorrow is M285, which is also one of the M series. Intravenously, the narcotic action is reversed within 2 minutes.
See, the main thing is to chase these animals a little way until they stop their doubling back action. In other words, chase them until they're slightly tired and then they tend to try and run away rather than double back, which gives you a bit of darting possibility. Well, the important thing about the darting is that if you herd them, just keep the animal ahead of the vehicle all the time and then stop it turning back. Once it's a small distance from the herd, it just tends to start running in a straight line, and it's very much easier to then get a dart.
Well, gentlemen, I think we've got a full day tomorrow. I think we should turn in.
The fire burned throughout the night, taking the edge off the bitter cold air of the desert. Night in the desert. No matter how many times you sleep under the stars, enveloped by the sounds of Africa, you still have a feeling of freedom and release, of being in touch with the elemental things of life. At once in touch, and yet at the same time, dwarfed by the immensity of the universe. When the sun's first rays slanted across the plain, the team was already awake. After breakfast, they went over their plans once more. M99 had been used in the Atosha Reserve, but here in the Namib, the animals were not so tame. There was no permanent ranger in the area, and poachers shot at will. It was going to be no easy matter to get near to a herd of Gemsbok, let alone chase one over the rough terrain. An hour later, they set out. Doc Ebedee's clutching his pressure cooker, which contained the darts loaded with the drug. They drove across the plains and the shifting sands of the Namib in search of their first Gemsbok.
Will we continue the slow approach?
Yeah, it's just come to the left a bit, please, to just get them down on the flat, so you know, this is where I'm stuck. Just get a little closer.
As they pass now, you can see this.
One at the back's a cow, the small is just a bull.
One of this funny gallop here is a young cow too. See,
the fourth one from the back is a cow, Roger.
Is it?
Yeah, that small one, fourth from the back.
All right, I'll go for
that. That third one from the back now.
Yeah.
Okay. Try and shoot across the left, and then come in from the right. Bring it to the right, this side, just hit a run. Get on to the left side, not too close, so that I can get the range. Okay, now get side with it. Okay, accelerate, get up. Right, you're on a level now. Cut in towards it, fast accelerate.
Lovely shot.
Now I hit again, in the groin.
So you're as the other. No, you're on this side now, eh?
Right.
That's sort of almost stuck to two bits of skin by the look of it. might have got the charge in the first bit of...
The fifth book is finally done. Slowly, uncertainly, the two trackers move in. There may be another burst of energy left, and those horns are deadly. But the drug has taken effect. The Femsbok is blindfolded, and a rubber hose is placed over its horns. Doc Ebedez treats the wound made by the dart with oreomycin, and administers the antidote before the Femsbok is lifted onto the truck.
Some penicillin now. Should counteract any infection from the dart, and also stress of traveling may bring on some hidden diseases or infections. Also some cortisone for stress, anti-stress factor. And we've given it some vitamins also to counteract the stress and the effect on the heart.
Okay.
Yeah. But will you take the horns from the head so he and I can lift the shoulder? Take the foot, your foot on him. Sure. You sure, me? Sure.
Yeah.
See? Take him, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That means a lot.
That is very much when it comes out.
Okay.
With the Hemsbok lying peacefully on the back of the truck, they drive back to the loading lorry, which is parked a few miles away under a cluster of mapani trees.
Do you think that herd will now miss the one that's been caught out of it?
Oh, yes, they sure will, but I don't think it'll upset them very much. Probably for a few days they'll sort of look around and expect that to come back.
You don't think that it's just, you know, they just see one disappear, not know, they do not know that it's coming back again, because they do split up and then, you know, after they join the herd, you think they can count or...
One of our experiences up in Tosha Game Park was we darted in a nursemaid. A nursemaid is an elderly cow that sort of takes charge of a number of young Pittsburgh.
While the mothers go out to drink.
Well, even while the mothers are still there, we darted one and we couldn't understand why 24 young Gemsbuck charged after her. They ran with her for about 3 miles. And when she dropped, they stood around looking at her.
Most bewildered.
I won't say most bewildered, they were really curious at what was going on. And even after we approached and started to mark her and take temperatures and things, we found they were still standing around, but they didn't know what to do without her. When she came round, they joined up with her, but she was in a very new state. She couldn't pay much attention to them, and they ran off and joined the rest of the herd.
The Hemsbok is placed in one of the crates, and the game catching continues, but with no more success. The herds start to run before the truck gets near enough, making for the nearby mountains, and on the one occasion that they manage to give chase, the Hemsbok moves so swiftly over the rough terrain that they have to give up for fear of breaking the truck in two. They have learnt their lesson. Tomorrow, they will choose their own ground, where they can chase the Hemsbok over the plains. Back at the camp, Doc Ebedez examines the one Hemsbok they've caught. It's lying in a cramped position, and he decides to bring it out of the crate. But the Hemsbok cannot walk. Rodney Baxter massages its legs, and then a piece of sacking is placed beneath its belly so that it can be lifted onto its feet.
All right, let's give it a little work out and then try again with the sack.
You just look, go, look, like such a
guard.
Just keep us there in case you fall.
There
you go. Just a little, let's walk on it.
It's like when your legs fall asleep.
Yeah, yeah, that's
you also get this.
She's got muscle cramp.
What's the paralysis of
partial pain. She's standing on her own.
A few faltering steps, and then it collapses again. The Gemsbok is put back into the crate. Later that evening, before retiring to bed, the team visit the Gemsbok. Its breathing is too fast, its temperature high, but it has enough energy left to resent the intrusion. It took three men battling in the confined space to hold the animal down while Doc Ebbides made his examination, and Timothy Bungay was lying on the roof of the crate, holding the lights and the recorder.
Just let me get over this side. Give me a what? Okay.
You got the one?
Yeah. Now, I'll be grabbing both those legs and pull back.
Hold me,
that's right.
You know what we can do now?
What?
Let's turn it.
Bring
it over this way.
Well, I'll take the front legs. Take the front legs here for me.
Right.
You got him?
Yeah, hang on. I've got one. You got the horn?
Let the horns come vertical.
I guess.
Should take it?
Yeah.
Could you break it down?
Yeah.
Stroke its brow and talk to it and you tell it what all it's got to live for. It's going to a game reserve where it can never be shot. This thing has, these are lucky, the ones we pick out are lucky. We are actually going to save them where the others will probably get shot by farmers and they don't realize it.
Soon the energy was spent. The others climbed out of the crate, leaving Doc Ebbides squatting in the corner, stroking the Gemsbok's head, and trying to persuade it to drink coffee from a beer bottle. They stayed with the Gemsbok for 2 hours, and after Doc Ebbides had given it another injection, they retired to sleep. But in the morning, the Gemsbok was dead. A post-mortem was performed to find out why.
Yeah, I wonder if we could just get out of the light a bit. Start the lungs. Very swollen. In other words, they're congested with blood. You can see how heavy they look. Very dark. Very edematous. You see all these areas
yes.
that are black? That's moisture. Edema. Body fluids collecting there. Look at the terrific, when I cut into it, terrific amount of blood found here.
Congested blood.
Sign of stress. We should find little hemorrhages here as well. I'll get that. Over there, there's a few of them. See them? Hemorrhages under the lining. It's brought on by shock. But look at the terrific edema here. This thing's been exerting itself. And a lot of blood and serum has flown through here and even burst right through the walls of the blood vessels. I'm just going to take a little piece of this for pathological examination. Edematous lung. Now, by rights, this lung should sink in water. It's so heavy. Let's have a look at the other side. The lung. Oh, yes, look at this here. Look at this hemorrhage.
That's hemorrhage.
Look at these hemorrhages here. And look how distended these little blood vessels are on the outside. You hardly ever see them.
Is that from, you think, up in chest?
That's from the
ovaries.
Ovaries, yes. Lungs working.
So it's not a good thing to chase them for such a long distance.
It's not a good thing to chase them for more than, I'd say, a half a mile at the utmost. Let's look at the heart. Oh,
Oh, gosh, this is interesting.
As the vultures gathered overhead, the team set out on their next game-catching expedition, driving past startled, bat-eared foxes and scampering earth squirrels, until they reached the grassy flats, where it was possible to drive at 50 miles an hour without breaking the truck into pieces.
What is this? This one? Have you seen this little one here with the short horns? Running, or he's going into the middle now.
That's a car. This one here, intermediate size. Definitely a cow. Take that one, yes.
Right,
we're going in. Cut it away from the herd, yes. Cut it away from the herd and then let it run so until it straightens out. No, that's one. The one straight ahead of us. Take her now.
Right.
Yeah, let her run. Just let her run. Just head her off and let her run.
That's fine.
She's running straight. Let her come round to the left now, pass us. You see when she's running straight. Just keep her that side, pull me away from the herd. Carry on.
Okay, you've got a lovely flat ahead of you. But the only trouble is if we hit the road, you're going to go through the ceiling.
Yeah,
you know the tracks of the road. I'll turn it once more, that way.
And then chase
and
it.
And then you're going.
And these flats are lovely and flat here now.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll come slowly. It doesn't matter where she runs here, you can...
Just try not to rapid accelerate, you know, just steady speed and then take your foot off the accelerator when I say ready. There's a hole ahead of us. Okay, accelerate. Take your foot off. Hit her. Stop. There's the dog. Stop.
It's exactly 10:35. That's the one dead ahead of us. There's one coming in from the left. You see, that's probably one of these lone bulls that's coming up to
join. Yeah, you can tell, actually. Look at the difference in the gait between the two.
Yes,
the one's got that rocking horse action. The other one is lumbering on behind.
Yes.
The one you see, how that one runs smoothly, and the other one's got that bouncing action.
Yes, it's quite obvious.
You see, it's stumbling.
Hold on.
She stopped. She's standing.
Actually, that other one coming up would be a good thing. I think they won't. She won't run off now. She'll stay in front.
I don't think by this time she really knows what's going on.
She had the dart 5 minutes now. They normally start showing symptoms of immobilization at about 8 minutes. This is where I saw and drove up to the same distance that we've been driving to those now. About 100 yards.
Yeah.
They just sort of stand and trot off slowly. 150 together, just here. It's magnificent sight. Just about 2 months ago now. No, about a month ago. They've broken up. I tried to break up the big herd myself because they're very vulnerable at that stage. If people come along, you just pull up a shot in their direction and one drops. She's showing symptoms. Look, the ears are forward, the head is down. She's starting to goose step. Can you see that?
Mm-hmm.
That's very typical. Ears are forward to try and pick up sounds because the eyes are blinded by the drug.
It's down, it's down, it's
going to go down.
It's down, it was down.
Went down on its four legs.
Yeah. That's fine, Rod. I think they're going to rope her. Let me get her on the car quick.
But she's going to walk quite a distance.
But yeah, but I can get by myself, I'll get close to her with the rope. If she runs, I'll just get in the car.
We can cruise up for quite a distance.
Thing is, she won't stop while the car's coming. I might be able to get close to her with the rope.
The hempspock lay there, panting and gnashing its teeth. Once again, it was blindfolded, a rubber hose placed on its horns, and it was taken back to the loading truck. All that day and all the next, until at last there were 5 Chemswok in the crates, and the time came to load up and depart. It took all the efforts of 8 men, plus a block and tackle, to haul the crates up the steel ladder and onto the truck.
Backside. Okay. Bernard, all we've got to do is one new pull.
Remember, you lift.
Come, Marcus.
To catch an ox. And in a way, it was an experiment, using a modern drug to catch wild animals in the most primitive conditions. And many lessons were learnt. Lessons about the drug itself, the reaction of the animals, the best way in which to catch them. But, as Bernard Viljoen remarked, those 5 Chemswok were probably the lucky ones. They were destined to live out their days in a game park. But the others, the ones that lived in the Namib Desert, were likely to fall prey to the poacher's bullet. Until the time comes when the Tinker's Flats are made into a proper reserve. And, as Doc Ebedees observed, it is much easier to be a hunter than it is to be a game catcher. To destroy, rather than to conserve.
To Catch an Oryx was recorded in the Namib Desert by Timothy Bungay and Dieter Plage, whose thanks are due to the Director of Nature Conservation in Southwest Africa, Mr. De La Butte, the Chief Ranger of the Atosha Reserve, Mr. Stoffel Rocher, and to Senior Game Ranger Rodney Baxter, Chief Vet Jaime Ebedees, and Chief Game Catcher Bernard Viljoen. Without their help and assistance, the program could not have been written and produced by Timothy Bungay. The program was edited by Darby Davis.
Join us again next week for another story of the African Bushbelt. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.